So let's step back to 2012, I believe it is, where it all started. What originally inspired you to write the App Design Handbook?
Yeah, I was following a bunch of creators online, people like Tim Ferriss, Chris Guillebeau, all kinds of great bloggers and creators. And I wanted to be like them. And so I had started a blog. I was learning how to get the first audience going, you know, really just building a writing habit.
Sure.
And then I saw people who were selling ebooks as digital products. And I thought, oh, that could be the thing for me. And I wanted to write a book so that I could get more iOS design work, like as a freelancer. I figured if you're the guy who wrote the book on the thing, like people would hire you.
Right.
And, you know, maybe make some money, but I didn't have high expectations. And so I ended up writing the book and launching it to an audience of 800 email subscribers. And it made $12,000 in the first day. And I thought, this is insane. I think this is my future. And so that was kind of the path.
So if you had launched that book as a more traditional ebook, as a Kindle ebook, do you think it would have had anywhere near the same level of success as it did, where you sold it more as a book with videos and stuff as a package?
It wouldn't have at all. Just because it would have sold 50% more copies, but it would have made a tiny fraction of the revenue, right? Because $8 to $10 is a like fairly normal priced ebook. Maybe even expensive. Right. I don't know. Right. People are thinking, oh, it's on the Kindle. It should be on, like, I'll buy it when it's on sale for $2.99, you know, and it takes a lot of $2.99 units to add up to anything.
Totally. Equal.
Whereas if you're thinking $299, which was not my price point, I was, you know, I was lower than that, but it doesn't take that many to add up to a meaningful income. And so really the best thing that I did was, one, charge plenty for the book. Like I started at $29. And so every purchase was substantial. And then to have multiple packages and tiers. And the way that I thought about it is in the base package, I'm going to tell you what to do. This is all my advice, tips, tricks, tactics, all of that. Right. And then the higher packages, I'm going to try to do as much for you as possible. So these are all my templates, my videos, resources, any of those things to shortcut that process. So someone who values their money more than their time can buy just the book for $29. And someone who values their time more than their money can buy the complete package for, I think it did $149.
That's clever. It reminds me of, I was going through some tutorials for Tailwind's UI, a CSS library recently, and they do that though on the free level, right? And so the core Tailwind's is free. You've got the video tutorials that are free, but then they sell these pre-made templates built with Tailwind's. So if you want to save time, you can just grab those and pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And actually, so one of the later things I did is I wrote a book called Authority, which was about all of this. And Adam Wathan, the creator of Tailwind, was one of the first people to go through Authority. So he's definitely put some good tactics in place over the years.
Oh, fascinating. Okay. Neat connection there. So you published the original book. You build Commit, I believe, as part of that. And then you moved on and wrote Designing Web Applications. So I'm curious, was the idea for ConvertKit already there in your head, or did it sort of come from the process of writing Designing Web Applications?
So my background was in, app design. And so I was doing that. I found myself talking a lot about designing software as I wrote these two books, more so than I was actually designing software. And so I wanted to do a couple things. I wanted to get back into software design, right? Like be a doer, not just a talker. And then these books were coming out and they were having like big spikes in launch, right? App Design Handbook did 12,000 the first day, total of 19,000 the first week. Designing Web Applications was 26,000 in the first day. And then I think had crossed 50,000 in sales by the end of the first month. There was a lot of momentum there, but I was seeing them drop off. Right. And as a full-time creator who's like, I'm not going to do freelance design anymore, then you need consistent income. And so I thought recurring revenue would be awesome. So recurring revenue, wanting to get back into actually making software. And then the third thing is just that I was getting really annoyed with MailChimp. I was surprised to find that email subscribers were driving the bulk of the revenue for my books. I thought it would be Twitter, Instagram, any new like fancy social network.
Right.
And it just wasn't, it was email. And so then I started like trying to master email, get good at it, learn all the tactics. And I just found that I was having to hack around MailChimp at every turn. And so then the, you know, the biggest reason to start ConvertKit was, I was like, look, let's make MailChimp, but for content creators, not for like generic small businesses, but for people who are doing exactly what I'm doing. And that's when ConvertKit started. And weirdly, in September 2012, I launched the App Design Handbook. December 2012, I launched Designing Web Applications. In January 2013, I started working on ConvertKit. So that was like the most prolific 3 or 4 months in my entire life.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Your GitHub commit log there must be crazy.
Yes.
So I'm curious, if you were starting over today, right? You got into this from writing books, and that was such a big thing. Well, not just books themselves, but sort of the course sets for, you know, the earlier part of the 2010s. Right now, newsletters are the rage. And of course, ConvertKit is part of this as selling, as helping people make paid newsletters. If you were starting over today, do you think you would publish your ideas as books again or as email newsletters?
Yeah, so I would do a free email newsletter because I think that's the best way to engage with subscribers, build a customer base that you can email for whatever product you have. I think paid email newsletters are really good for prolific writers. So someone who has that writing habit and says like, look, I can write a fantastic long form essay every week, like clockwork, no problem. Where I think they're not as good is if someone doesn't have that skill set or that desire where they're like, I learned to be a writer as part of building my online business, which is where I was, rather than like, right, I'm a writer by trade. And so in those cases, I would use a free email newsletter to point to other types of products. The amazing thing is once you have someone's attention, you can monetize it in so many ways, right? Through sponsorships, affiliates. My favorite would be books and courses. I would still go for that model because I think it, you can charge more for it. You can package it into a single launch. Like it can be a huge amount of effort going, you know, in upfront, but then it's done and it can continue selling for you. So I would go that model. And I still contend that a lot of people, you know, a digital product of some kind, a course or something, is a better fit for them than, you know, a recurring paid newsletter. Another favorite of mine is a paid email course. So this is when you have a like an automation set up in ConvertKit that's 10 emails over 10 weeks, right? It is that one thing.
Right.
People buy it one time. It doesn't require a designer. It doesn't require like custom fulfillment software or any of this. And that can be a great first product. I did one called 10 Days to Better Design that I just sold for $10. This is back in 2014 or something. And that was a fantastic product. And I highly recommend that model for people.
Craig Maud recently had tweeted something like that about doing sort of email newsletters as a series or as a season. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot to that because you've got a finished product and it's sort of like the book where you know you're done after a certain amount of time. And that can be good.
Yep. The only downside is that you don't have recurring revenue. And so, but you have to think about the recurring revenue versus a one-time sale, right? What's the churn? A lot of recurring revenue on content has relatively high churn. And so, you know, it's important to factor in, is it better to get all the money up front or to spread it out over time?
Totally. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.